This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate Gee. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right, good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Jen Hawk and Dr. Doug Lyle with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Hawk, Dr. Lyle, how are you both doing this evening?
Good.
Very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I think last year we had, 6 shows on just the coronavirus data. Mm-hmm. And then since then we've had a couple of, interspersed comments and questions about things related to COVID. And so something that's been in the news that I wanted to ask you guys about is this lab leak thing. What's been going on there? What is it?
Just wander right in.
Yeah. Well, I think we probably have a lot to say about this, but I want to, Jen can just roll and then I'll roll. We'll just talk about, we probably have some slightly different fascinations with different angles of this, but roll, Jen. I'll be interested to hear what you're thinking.
We're not supposed to discuss this because it's against expert consensus, Doug. It's irresponsible conspiracy mongering to nearly suggest that COVID could have been leaked intentionally or non-intentionally, most likely non-intentionally, from the lab that studies this exact kind of virology in Wuhan. So, I think everybody, probably many of our listeners are more up to speed on this than I am. I don't know how up to speed on you are. Most of what I know about this and how things have changed in the last couple of weeks has been been really fascinating to watch this again with my social scientist hat on, where you kind of are watching the whole narrative shift where, so of course, everybody, if we just go back in our little time machine, do your little Wayne's World, we're going to go back in time.
Yeah.
Back about a year ago, when Trump was came out pretty strongly in favor of the hypothesis that COVID was generated in a lab. And this got immediately conflated with some sort of intentional, malevolent international conspiracy to unleash this as some kind of bioweapon upon the world. And the two forces of it being conflated with this sort of conspiratorial energy and it coming from Trump's mouth instead of Fauci or somebody else made it sort of unspeakable. And there were several people early on who said, oh, this is irresponsible and racist to suggest as much. And this is a typical pandemic generated in the typical pandemic way. It's jumped from animal to human. And there's no reason to think that this came from a lab, despite the fact that you've got, this virology lab in Wuhan that is doing exactly this kind of work and turns out to be doing very specifically US-funded what's called gain of function research to essentially make a coronavirus, a novel coronavirus, as the most infectious possible coronavirus to gain some insight into how to defeat future pandemics. So that's the whole logic of why these places exist to begin with. And these places have had all kinds of viruses get out into, get out of their security protocols before and into the wild, caused all sorts of havoc. And one of the the main circumstantial pieces of evidence that is pointing toward this scenario is the relatively lax security at the levels at which they're doing this research in this particular lab, a couple of blocks from the wet market that took the blame for the origin story of COVID. So everything, let's just be really clear, everything at this point as we're recording in late May is still circumstantial. There's no smoking gun here, but there's very strong circumstantial evidence, including the fact that three workers at this lab were hospitalized in November of last year before this thing had officially begun with COVID-like symptoms. Doug can remind me of some other pieces of the puzzle here, but
this is O.J. Simpson.
The lab seemed to be shut down for about a month. There was no cell phone activity, which suggested some sort of emergency work stoppage, again, about 2 months before the world knew about COVID. Mm-hmm. There are several different things. But certainly for anybody who has... you don't have to be a major conspiracy theorist at this point to start putting this together. And it is all still circumstantial. But the main piece that I'm looking at for my information on this is written by, of all people, it's written by Nicholas Wade, who has written a book that we've discussed on the podcast before, which I can never remember the name of. Troublesome. I always want to say disagreeable inheritance problematic inheritance. Yeah. It's one of the, not a very easy name to remember, but a troublesome inheritance, which is about kind of how personality aggregates up into culture and recent adaptations and evolutionary histories among populations in the world today. And so it's easy for people to latch onto the fact that he is the author of this piece and say, oh, the great discredited Nicholas Wade, despite writing for the New York Times for eons and having this long and storied journalistic career, because he wrote a book about cultural and personality differences among populations in the globe. He is, as the kids would say on Twitter, literally a eugenicist. But he wrote the sweeping piece that gets into every last little detail that you could possibly want to know about this particular lab and its history and its funding and what they were working on exactly and all the little permutations. And of all places, it was published in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, which is a really interesting place to find this piece. They are, if people don't know or don't remember, this is the outfit that manages the infamous Doomsday Clock. They've been managing this, you know, for, oh God, at least half a century at this point. So this is, you know, it's 100 seconds to midnight right now, I believe. And it moves back and forth close to midnight, depending on how dire the situation is in the world on any number of dimensions. And one of the things that they've been using for the last 5 or 10 years to kind of determine how close to doomsday we are is internet misinformation. That's like one of the big causes of, you know, the reasons that we should be worried about collective apocalyptic results is all of the misinformation that's rampant on the web. So they're very worried about that. So the fact that they either approached Wade or Wade approached them, but they chose to be the ones to publish this piece is really, really just a extra little social science fascinating piece to me. So that's kind of my 30,000 foot view of what's going on here. I along with Doug, I think, have always considered the lab leak hypothesis to be a very viable hypothesis, to no reason to throw it out untested or unexplored. But it is this really interesting example of something that became unspeakable very early in the pandemic because there was this expert consensus around it, and that was the science. And if you questioned the science, you were getting people killed. And now we have this pivot. Now, if you open up the paper, you know, Fauci himself is saying he can't rule it out. You've got the CDC saying, yeah, maybe there's something here. They're forcing Biden to acknowledge it. And you have cases where Vox, which is this online left-leaning online magazine, was caught in the act of going back to their articles from a year ago and editing them to make it sound as if they weren't dismissive of this hypothesis from the beginning, when they very much were. Mm-hmm. So they've been caught doing that. And there are probably other people who are doing that, who want to claim, oh, we never tried to shut down debate around this, and we're open to debate, and we're very fair-minded, when that is not how things have gone with the lab leak hypothesis or really anything having to do with COVID. So this is just very interesting. I mean, it might be the opening bell of World War III, and so we might not be calling it very interesting here pretty soon, as this gets us into massive international intrigue and a cover up, and our relationship with China is profoundly threatened by this, and lots of other things. But for now, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is. I'll tell my. I can't. Don't let me forget my punchline, Jen, which is that this is why I'm a libertarian. So I don't want to forget that.
Do you ever forget that punchline? I don't think.
Preach.
I think that's deep in there.
So here's my, Jen, you just heard the super highbrow academic among us that we have on our panel to really doing an incredible job at parsing words and being politically correct, but open and intelligent and fair-minded. Now you're going to hear my version. So that Jen and living and Beat Your Jeans get to live on. I will be canceled and probably put in some gulag somewhere. This is a smoking gun. This is O.J. Simpson. They definitely created this virus. There is no doubt. I have zero doubt. Apparently, a very sophisticated mathematician rates the odds at like 99.99997%. Like, he actually has run the numbers on what the possibility is right this minute that this was actually natural. It was not natural. It's obvious. If you read Nick Wade's article in the Atomic Bulletin?
The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists.
Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists. It's obvious. So it's there's so much evidence there, and there's it leaves no doubt. This is, quote, you're convicted beyond a reasonable doubt. It's I had many reactions to this reading this, and it's like part of it is the aha, caught you, you know what I mean? Pointing the fingers. The other thing, though, I actually have a lot of relaxation and some degree of hope and increased fear. So let me sort of walk you through my reaction. My reaction was, in the very worst case scenario, coming from the way out conspiracy theorists, was that somehow an international consortium led by Bill Gates.
Well, wait, before you go too far with that, that's actually, he's not having the best week either. So there are definitely people in internet land that are like, things that make you go, we've got these unflattering photos of Bill Gates emerging for the first time since his divorce announcement. At the same time, we're rewriting the narrative. Just, just putting that out there. You can make up your minds as you will.
I have no doubts that Bill Gates, having gamed this thing out way in advance, I don't doubt that he knew how to profit from this. I don't know what all of his motivations were in and around it. But here's, Bill Gates is a sideshow to this. The real sideshow is actually amazingly benign, in my judgment. And Jen can chirp in and modify or comment on this. Please do. But I see this as actually not very surprising. So this is my basic understanding of the story, and I may be only getting this 90% right, but the spirit of it, it's 100% right. And that is that these two big problems that we had, two of these things that got loose, I guess SARS-1 and MERS or whatever the heck it is, these things were from animals, and they were dangerous as hell, and they scared the hell out of virology scientists. And so Incidentally, as a side note, they did come from animals. And by the way, folks, those animals were found. It wasn't in one lousy bat. It's in all these bats. So in other words, they can find it.
Pretty quickly and easily.
Not difficult. So in other words, if some coronavirus mutated from an animal coronavirus and then wound up in a human, you can find the animals because they're all over the place. Now, guess what? We're 15 months into the biggest pandemic in a century with all the modern technology and all kinds of reasons to find that animal. And guess what? No animal. There are, just as another side note, these people, the people that did this are actually, it's a Chinese lab, I think. Is the doctor's name Dr. Shi, I think, is the...
Dr. Shi, I believe.
Yeah, she's a woman who's the head of the lab.
The bat lady.
Lady.
Known as the bat lady.
Yeah, the bat lady, okay. And she, you know, wrote a grant. And by the way, there's a reason why she's writing the grant, and that's because these grants are funded because there's agencies in the world like the National Institute of Health in the United States and the National Institute of whatever that thing is that Fauci is ahead of. Those are places that are worried about one of these pandemics getting loose from some wet market somewhere. And so they've been thinking that they needed to do research on coronaviruses because they might mutate out of a wet market at some point and cause a big problem. And so they said, we need to know more about how they're structured, how they work, so that we can, you know, figure these things out. I don't know, maybe come up with, you know, how we're going to do vaccines out in front of it, like whatever the hell. They've got all this worry and concern. And so in 2012, Anthony Fauci was proposing that they do this kind of research, and a lot of people were pushing back and saying, no, it's too dangerous. You're walking into trouble. Many scientists were saying, don't do it. Don't start splicing human genes into rats so that you can test whether or not how to make them more infective, to try to figure out what mutation could take place and then what we're going to do about it. And Fauci said, no, I think it's worth doing. And he's on record for that. Now, we fast forward. It was banned for a few years. We fast forward a few years later. And Anthony Fauci is the head of the agency, is the head, not a cog in the wheel. He's the top guy. He and the top of the NIH, both of them were facing the problem that there had been a ban against this kind of research. And they looked at that thing and they said, you know what? We like that research, both of us. So they signed waivers for the research. They didn't just sign a waiver to do the research. They funded the research from the grant application from the Dr. Shi in China. They paid the Chinese lab to do the research. What research did they do?
Not directly. Yeah. I think they paid University of North Carolina.
Whatever.
Subcontracted. Okay.
The point is, Anthony Fauci didn't just write a check of thousands of checks that he wrote. This was a highly specific, important, you know, personal interest, etc., that got a waiver from Fauci and the head of the NIH, whose name I can't remember, but I can remember Fauci because he's supposedly a star. Okay. And so what they did was they gave them the money. They contracted because they wanted the research done. So in the grant application, right there, plain as day, right on in the blockchain. Okay. Right there, the grant application is basically, we are going to create a SARS-2 COVID virus. And we are going to alter,
make it as infectious as possible.
We're going to make it as infectious as possible. And we have learned how to splice the genetic code in a particular spot to enter a gene that will make it, you know, transmissible to humans and all that sort of thing. And we're going to use humanized rats, which they're able to do. Don't even ask me what those look like, okay? Mm-hmm. But the point is they are genetically humanized rats, and we're going to test it, okay?
So they have a certain
to see if we can create a SARS-2 COVID virus.
Yeah.
That will be infectious to humans. This is the grant application. They then are bragging about it in 2019 in December. They are bragging that it has been accomplished. 4 to 5 weeks later, oops, it's loose.
Well, they're doing all of this research in a most of it at a level of security equivalent to a United States dentist office,
right?
Yeah, a level two or three. Like there's some gloves, there's some, yeah, you know,
you spray it down now and then. Anything.
Yeah, but this is not wearing the space suit doing things, you know, because they don't like it, because it's harder to work that way. Researchers don't like to work in that environment,
like, and it's either.
They just.
Too soon, Nathan. That's really good. Okay,
but this is like a, you know, the likelihood, because none of them are vaccinated, obviously,
right.
so the, you know, the potential for contamination and infection is very high.
Yep. And they did, so their people got sick. And the coronavirus got loose because a mouse sneezed that got infected with this. And it had the human genome spliced into it. Incidentally, it's spliced in exactly the location that they know exactly where to put it. And not only that, that is the mutation that they would worry about possibly happening in nature, but not too much. It's a very specific place that geneticists know how to do it. And it turns out that no other of the like 100 plus coronaviruses that they have been sequenced, any of them have that gene in that spot. Just SARS-CoV, you know, 19 or 2, whatever the hell this thing is. That this one is the only one that has the splice, that gene in that location. That is a known location to put that gene in. Okay. This is O.J. Simpson and his Bruno Mali shoes and his blood and his cut-up hands, etc., and his footprint, okay? And yet, it's only a 1 in 37 billion trillion chance that it was him, okay? I mean, that it wasn't him. But, you know, it could have been an alien from a foreign land that happened to have O.J.'s DNA.
It's actually all of that plus writing the book called If I Did It, which he also did. So the fact that OJ, that, like, he then goes on to do this, like, hypothetically, if I were going to kill my wife and her friend, this is how I'd go about it. So this is very similar.
This is what Fauci's doing now. So Anthony Fauci in January knew damn well that this was the COVID virus that he bought and paid for. It's not anything else. And now we're looking at something interesting that I'm far less outraged and worried than I was before, people, by the way. Because the truth of the matter is, this is just normal government bungling, is what this is. This is not...
Oh, so you didn't forget. You didn't need me to remind you.
Yeah. This is not the Chinese Communist Party trying to figure out how to do germ warfare and going in and creating some problem and then letting it loose and go wreak havoc all over the world. That is not what happened here. I was worried that that was a possibility, okay? And I thought, man, that, you know, I thought it was a little weird that it would have been to their own people, or, you know, I didn't know. How do you know what a communist dictator is thinking and why? But the truth of the matter is, I was worried that this is what this was. That isn't what it was. It was Anthony Fauci and the head of the NIH and their buddies saying, we really need to be ready in case there's ever an animal transmission of a COVID virus that could be a big problem. So let's make one. You know where? What we're going to do is we're going to contract it out to a Wuhan lab that's what they do. Oh, son of a bitch, it's loose. Well, what are we going to say now? You can imagine, as Nick Wade says, the backroom deal right there. The Americans go, hey, you idiots, we contracted you to do this thing and you let it loose. What the hell? And they're saying, hey, you paid for it. It's your idea. That's what this is. And so everybody, it's deny, deny, deny. This is right out of the Guide to the Married Man, okay? a movie in the 1950s. The guy is caught cheating, and his wife walks in, and pretty soon the other chick just starts getting dressed and walks out, and the wife's saying, that girl, and the guy's saying, what girl? That girl? What girl? And just wait till the hot girl leaves, and the wife's just like, oh, she's gone.
I guess there wasn't anybody
yeah. here. So everybody is total in denial, okay? And Trump, of course, got some information, obviously, from somewhere that said, this is bullshit. Like, this is exceedingly unlikely. All it would take was one of his staff to look up, hey, did we have any government contracts to build a SARS-CoV virus, in China? Oh, guess what we did?
Specifically in Wuhan?
It's right there in Wuhan. It's right there. It's got Anthony Fauci's signature on it. Damn straight we did that. Okay? And it's like, wow, isn't that a little miracle that it broke out in Wuhan, thousands of miles away from any animal that could have passed it there. So yeah, they knew.
Specifically thousands of miles away from the bats that are carrying the closest, the version of this coronavirus that can jump to humans. So there are some of those bats in Yunnan. But those bats were brought from Yunnan to this institute and, caged there for this research. So like the Dr. Shi went and collected them. That's why she's known as the Bat Lady.
Yeah.
They are not a natural species in the Wuhan area. It's very far away.
Yeah. And they would have been in hibernation during that time, evidently.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is that this is OJ writing the book. Anthony Fauci really should write a book. If I had funded the research.
it's like Robert McNamara's in retrospect,
right?
Like it's sort of very like, hey, I had the best of intentions. You can't like, and I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure they all did. You know, this is a huge. I mean, the specter of a global pandemic has terrified a lot of people for a long time, and there's good reason to engage in risky research around this kind of stuff, but this particular type of risky research with this particular level of control and containment obviously was an absolute catastrophe.
Irresponsible as hell.
Yeah.
It was arrogance and irresponsibility beyond belief. And anyway, I look at this thing though as not sinister, which is interesting. Now, Jen, the political scientist, can see all kinds of sinister things happening afterwards, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is
the sinister consequences.
Yeah, yeah, there are very sinister...
As everyone tries to manage their, position themselves, manage international status. And, I mean, this is a massive international incident.
Yes.
It's not good.
No.
And, of course, all of the records are sealed. The lab is sealed. Yeah. Like, nobody can actually point to this directly.
No.
Nobody's talking in China.
No.
So short of some whistleblower who is...
We did have one.
Asylum. We did.
Got one. And she said exactly that. Yeah. She said 8-9 months ago, I saw where the gene was split and it split in the wrong place and I know what they did. And she's, was booed out of the U.S. Newsroom. But the truth is that lady was telling the truth. Exactly. I hope she's still alive. I'm sure she's buried in a bunker somewhere in Arizona.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything from her in a very long time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I hope she's... We probably got a banned Twitter account, But this is the thing. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, people really need to wrap their heads around this because 6 months ago, if you went on Twitter and you talked about the lab leak, you'd get your account banned for misinformation.
Yep.
And it is not misinformation. It was just a contrary, heterodox, against consensus opinion. And that doesn't mean that every heterodox opinion out there is equally worthwhile or valid, but we've embraced this silencing and this rallying around consensus opinion as if it is stable and everlasting and can't be overturned by additional data. And that is anti-science. It is a path of destruction for everything that science represents. And we need to get a hold of that before this goes any further. And so if this is not an instructive case for that, I don't know what would be.
Yeah. I don't know enough about Anthony Fauci to have an opinion about the guy's personality. I know that I actually try to get a sense of personality the same way everybody else does, which is sort of reading the cues, listening to the guy talk, etc. And in my opinion, you know, as an expert in psychology, seems like a pretty decent guy. Okay. He's a decent guy who has his own pet opinions about what's important, and he's a powerful government bureaucrat. And now you're going to have my libertarian hat come out. Why is there a powerful government bureaucrat in the first place? Okay, so what we have is we got governments, unelected officials overriding the concerns of all kinds of scientists. And quite frankly, you know, I'm old enough that I started hearing about things like gene splicing in like 1982, okay? And I remember there was concerns when that sort of thing started to be able to happen, like, whoa, this could be a big problem. And I remember that. And to me, it kind of went by the wayside of, hey, a nuclear bomb could drop somewhere. That could be a big problem. So, and those were, I mean, we had a very serious near nuclear catastrophe in, I guess, the 1980s. Jen might know exactly when it was. It's a famous case when the Russians thought that we were attacking them, and it was actually nothing other than a computer error on seeing a bunch of clouds. And there's one guy that stood up and just said, no, I don't think it is the Americans, even though that's what the computer says. So in the same way, I mean, one guy with some guts and his supervisor literally saved the world. Okay. And so can't acknowledge him though, because then they would have had to acknowledge, like, where is the Nobel Committee? You know what I mean? Come on, people.
Yeah. So, truly.
So, anyway, but in the same thing, I remember, you know, we're hearing things like, we're understanding that biotech is getting more and more and more and more sophisticated. You know, they clone a sheep. Like, we know it's we are racing towards greater and greater knowledge, and we're disturbed about it. We're disturbed about Monsanto and Roundup and all kinds of things. Rightfully so. But I've kind of shrugged my shoulders, feeling like I've had this sort of background feeling of that maybe looks kind of like this. And that is, you know what? You better not drop a nuke, because if you drop a nuke, we're going to drop 10 nukes and it's going to be a big mess. So if you're Iran and you threaten the destruction of Israel, it better be, you know, a few shitty little bombs at a time, because if you ever come big, your whole place is going under. So hopefully your own, you know, ability to conceive that you don't actually rule your own fate here if you do that, hopefully can sink into those brains. I don't know if that's true, but it seems to me that it should be. And so I also felt like, you know what? I hope the virologists and the bureaucrats that guide them in the world, like a guy named Anthony Fauci, whose name I will now finally learn, that I'm thinking that, you know, 20 years ago, you know, I hope you guys have enough sense to not do some really stupid shit. And I hope if you're some Chinese or Russian, you know, bureaucrat who thinks we can, I don't know what, spread an anthrax or smallpox or something all over the United States. Like, I hope you understand that it's going to come back to haunt you, and including you personally. So my thinking has always been, people should be reasonably smart enough to know that biological warfare, other than Saddam Hussein gassing some people, that's localized. But something like this, an infectious catastrophe, could be unbelievable, out of control, and no way to stop it, and it could get you and yours. So I've always had this feeling that there would be enough brains among people that were down bending over the microscopes to, like, have a little lab meeting and say, are we sure we know what we're doing and we should be safe? Boy, was I wrong. It's like, no, that isn't true. These guys are inherently curious and inherently ignorantly arrogant, to the point where they cook this thing up just like Dr. Strangelove would tell them. It's like, holy smokes, you went in there and you spliced the little thing and you put it in the computer, and then what do we got? We got just what your grant proposal said. Except we got 3 million deaths on our hands, and our name's Anthony Fauci, and we were one of the two main signatures that made that happen. And then we're going to get up in front of the cameras and do what? Deny, 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 guide to the married man. That's what this is. But at least it's not, you know, it isn't Adolf Hitler. It's not Mao Zedong. It's not, it isn't out for the destruction and the rule of the world. No, this was just stupid government bullshit. And you know what? When you have, a whole bunch of money directed, this is the kind of things people get into. If the research and development is left to Procter & Gamble, all you're going to get is a better Frito. That's what you're going to get.
And who doesn't want a better Frito?
Okay.
Really, keeps me up at night.
But I'm actually enormously relieved that it is not, in fact, a biochem warfare thing gone wrong. No. It's our little friendly Anthony Fauci, arrogant, ignorant, government bureaucrat that let this thing loose. And he's right out in front of the camera saying, well, could be, the thing I read recently is he's saying, well, it could have been an animal thing that was brought to the lab. No, Anthony, go read the grant proposal that you signed on. They gave you exactly what you asked for.
So that's Dr. what Hawk, happened. Maybe this new political group that you predicted last year is going to be anti-foul.
Oh, well, yeah, there's anti-Faucism, there's sort of that is a movement that exists. I mean, Fauci, I my knowledge here is limited. I'm getting into territory sure. that is, I only know a little bit of his past, but, he's a very important figure in the AIDS epidemic and uh-huh. in just HIV research in general. And he is, I think, very fairly criticized for being very pro AZT, which was this very toxic experimental drug to treat HIV positive patients, many of whom were killed by the drug rather than the disease. I think that's mm-hmm. a fairly well-established situation at this point. And he was a unfailing advocate of that treatment. And one of the sources of criticism of him, even at the time, you go back and read op-eds in the Village Voice, that open letter to Tony Fauci, mm-hmm. Other pieces 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Nearly 40 years ago, nearly at this point, was that you don't understand the science. You're a bureaucrat. You understand politics. You understand the politics of science, but you're missing the actual science. And so, this has been kind of weaponized against Fauci in ways that are both fair and unfair, I think. But this is definitely a situation where you have people making political decisions and trying to act in the public's interest maybe missing a few steps and maybe leading the whole situation into a whole series of unintended consequences from really good intentions. And those are the worst kind of disasters. Those are at the level of social engineering or the worst kind of wide scale catastrophes are usually some combination of unintended consequences from very good intentions or from well-meaning intentions. And then you add in this sort of overlay of government bureaucracy and multiple states, and you mix in together a little just general human nature, i.e. researchers don't like to work in the spacesuits. They want to work in the level 2 lab where they just have to wear the gloves and wash their hands.
Yeah.
And hubris sneaks in, and you get this kind of situation. And then you've got, politically looking back at this, it seems stipulate that this is true. Okay. Yeah. So just to remind everybody, we're speaking in very strong language, but we don't know that this is true. Yeah. But let's stipulate that it is true. Let's stipulate that OJ is guilty. And we again get back in the time machine, and we go back to the early rhetoric and the early conversations around this. If you watch videos of Trump being questioned, do you have reason to believe that this escaped from a lab? He doesn't miss it. He's like, yeah, I absolutely do. And So I think it is unreasonable to assume, if this is true, that Trump didn't know it at the time. And then this just opens such a Pandora's box. I think even Wade uses that phrase of all of the political decision making. How many lies upon lies upon lies upon deflections upon misrepresentations? I mean, how much of what we know about COVID is true? It's really, and I'm not using that as an entry point into COVID denial or anything else that people will use it to do. I am just saying, you know, the whole idea of consensus and follow the science and do what you're told. I mean, this is coming from a place of damage control, not yes. of honest information. And that really just, that's going to require a really forensic analysis to unpack everything that happened around that over the course of the year and is still ongoing, of course, with this vaccine rollout. So this is,
which is its own fiasco.
Heads will roll eventually. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if Fauci's is among them. He hasn't survived this long. He didn't get through the HIV crisis without being pretty savvy. So, so who knows? But yeah, the fiasco upon fiasco.
Oh, the fall guy is going to be Dr. Xi. You know what I mean?
Yeah, one of them. Yeah,
it's going to
be.
Sure. Yeah. The thing is that. You know, this is all gets to be a game of, I don't know, in some movie there's going to be, you know, who did it, and 17 guys are going to be pointing at the other 17 guys. Like, this is what it's going to be. And they're going to put a cloud of mystery over it. And it's disgusting to see, like, what utter just bald-faced lying has gone on. But what would you expect? I mean, picture yourself, if you're Anthony Fauci or any of the other main players, that you just let loose exactly what it is that has been a major issue in your life to be able to help the public from defending itself from. Like, you just blew it. And you just blew it huge. What are you going to do? Okay. You're going to do a mea culpa? Come on. There's no chance. Who would do such a thing? Who would have the guts to do a mea culpa?
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter. Yeah, might have the guts and the personality.
That's the only political personality I can think of who wouldn't just double down and deflect. Everybody else is going to minimize the crisis.
Sure, of course.
They're going to
blame everybody else.
Well, just
else.
Like McNamara did. This is a modern McNamara where the crisis unfolds. It's getting worse on your watch, and you can't admit that you've failed and that you've sent all of these boys to their deaths, and that you continue to do so. So you just have to keep justifying the original logic that sent them there. Because if you reverse course now, then you've got all of that blood on your hands, and so you've just got to dig in. Stay the course.
Yeah. That's what.
And then you write your book.
Then you write your book later.
25 years later.
Yeah.
Right. You know, a couple of years before you die, saying, you know, in retrospect, I made some mistakes.
Yeah. There you go.
Mistakes were made.
So anyway, this is the mistakes were made.
Mistakes were made. Yes. You always want to use the passive voice.
That's it. Mistakes were made, folks. Lots of them. And of course, I'm not shocked and appalled by the I know why I'm feeling heartened about this, Jen. I'm feeling heartened because it looked like it was on life support, we have a media. It's like, what do you know? I found out the story. What do you know? Nick Wade got it published in a place and it got onto the internet and you sent it to me and I read it and it's like, got it. Now I actually know. And you're seeing it now leak out because Nick Wade has, you know, obviously the piece itself is unbelievably credible. Nick Wade himself is highly credible, whether people like what he says about, you know, the realities of behavior genetics or not is irrelevant. The truth is that intelligent, fair-minded people, a la, you know, somebody that might be politically upset by any of these discussions, but a guy like Richard Dawkins reads a Nick Wade and has to say, whoa, checkmate, okay? There's really no other way to look at it. And so you start to you start to break down the political divide about these opinions, and you start to realize, whoa, no, there's a truth here with a capital T, and we need to look at this because, for God's sakes, people, you know, Jen and I did a thing about a year ago for Engine 2 called the Ultimate Fire Drill, COVID. And in other words, hey, could have been a lot worse, okay? And that was our point. And, you know, and then that wasn't that taken down? I think it was taken off of YouTube. Like, it's misinformation.
I don't think it's been taken down, but it's been it gets flagged everywhere. It's flagged. So anybody who posts it somewhere, it gets the little this you know, here, go to the Wikipedia page for COVID to understand the truth, because this isn't the truth that you're
right. So gosh,
proceed
darn it.
At your own risk.
No, I darn it, Jen. We didn't get absolutely taken off. We didn't really make
time.
The cut. We're not the varsity. So anyway, yeah, and it is the ultimate fire drill. That's what we're saying. It's like, hey, guys.
Well, yeah, so we should be grateful that it escaped when it did, instead of another year of additional gain-of-function research that made it even more virulent, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, it could have so easily been worse. Okay.
Yeah.
Could have so easily. This thing could have easily. Oh, yeah, well, that's the whole point. My hope is that everybody's embarrassed now. It's kind of like... it's kind of like me when I almost had an accident when I was texting and driving. It's like, okay, get your act together. That could have been a mess. And so this was it's bad. And of course, millions of people have died, and people know my feeling about this, that it's not good. And of course, it's a great widespread tragedy. But thank God, it's not a tremendous amount of life, a human life lost. It's a lot of lives lost, but it's truncating lives, you know, a short time behind, next to their natural death. So that is, but that could have so easily not been the case. They could have monkeyed with these genetic codes and made this thing so that it was 20 or 30 times the cost of COVID for human life, easily. And so hopefully these Dr. Strangeloves get a wake-up call, and hopefully the world is safer, you know, for a while because of it. But that's, you know, as a libertarian, I'm like, what are you guys doing this research for? Like, who's funding it? Why? How's this all taking place? It's like, I don't like that.
Yeah, you're funding it.
Yeah, I funded it. You funded it. Our listeners funded it. The United States funded the COVID virus through its bureaucrats that turned around and savaged the world. That's what happened, including us. So now we know. That's why, you know, one of my good friends who I should remain nameless, that is a libertarian, always says, yeah, that's why I didn't vote for the bastards. He's always in a position to criticize any administration, Democrat or Republican. And he tells people, not my fault. I didn't vote for him. And so, you know, that's how, it's an easy place to sit. But this is an example of, you know, government intervention in human lives, and how, of course, it's necessary, but the Jeffersonian view to me is the right view, that it should be as little as necessary. And this, you know what? So an animal bites somebody, gets loose, et cetera, sometime. You know, the work should have been on preventing, you know, the kind of things that could happen in the, quote, wet markets. The work should not have been gene splicing in a sloppy lab paid for by the United States so that this could get loose. No, that was not the right way to address this problem, in my judgment. So anyway, that's what I have to say about it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good last word.
Yeah.
You got in your libertarian rant.
I did.
So there's really, I mean, where else do we need to go?
That's right. You got it.
Yeah, I will just one final, just to really drive it home. Like I hope, I don't think it will have, you know, yes, I hope it serves as a warning to the Dr. Strangeloves of the world, but I also would hope that it serves as a warning to any consumer of media.
Yes.
That, you know, it just like check your arrogance a little bit, you know, check your certainty, stay open to possibility, stay critical, stay, you know, this is not an invitation to become an absolute conspiracy theorist, but there are degrees of difference there. And I think there, this is a stunning example of just discourse being really closed off because of who was representing this point of view. I think anybody who argues that this was an unspeakable hypothesis for any other reason than because it came from Trump is just fooling themselves. It was because it came from Trump, and it just became an absent part of any conversation about the origins of this virus. And so this should serve in a perfect world as a really important lesson for everybody out there who's trying to educate themselves and pay attention to the world. But I fear that it will not, but it should, damn it.
Yeah, it should. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.